Campbell, we're going to start our first session for this part of the program. So I'll hand over to Di and Sheila.
Thanks very much.
Well, thanks very much. This morning, what Di and I are going to do is we're going to try and widen out the discussion. My name's Sheila McNeil. I work for the Justitia Service and I'm based at the University of Strathclyde in Glasgow. This is my colleague Di Griffiths, who works at the University of Bolton. He's a reader in e-learning at the Department of CETAS. I won't go into the difference between CETAS and just CETAS just now, because that would take all of the half hour of the talk. But basically, what we're going to do today is talk a little bit about the JISC e-learning programme. Diana's covered a bit of it already, which is quite nice, because I was unsure how many people were going to know about the programme or what level you would know about. And then really most of the session will be handed over to Di and to talk about some other developments. And then hopefully, if we've got some time, we can have a discussion about how we can start moving on thinking in learning design from the projects that are going on internationally. So it's great we have so many people from out with the UK and who are not involved in the JISC Design for Learning programme here as well. So hopefully we can get some discussion. So very briefly, because Diana has gone over this, the JISC Design for Learning programme is a two-year programme. It ends next year and it's part of the pedagogy strand of the JISC e-learning programme. So it's part of a whole range of initiatives involved in e-learning. And it's not just exploring IMS learning design or LAMS, it's the wider context of designing for learning. As Diana said, it's exploring the processes of designing, planning learning designs, and it has quite a strong practitioner focus, and it's looking at ways also to support communities use learning design tools and practices. Program aims, when we went through it already this morning, so I'll just skip through that slide. Just a quick summary again of the projects, just to give you a bit more idea of when they're finishing. The models of practice project finished earlier this year. The two pedagogic planner projects, which Diana mentioned, finish in February next year. The rest of the projects, the implementation and the technical development projects, they're all finishing at the end of October. So there's a lot of activity going on just now. The support project, which I'm involved in, and the evaluation project run by Glenafric obviously span the whole length of the project. And I just put down here that we are covering an awful lot of different types of processes and tools, but there are some projects using LAMS, and some of them are going to be here, I know, today talking about that. In terms of support project, I think I just want to bring out some of the points that Diana made about communities and sharing designs. One of the things that we've been tasked to do throughout the programme is to provide a place for people to share their designs, what they're doing, an online community, and think about ways of extending that and establishing that. I help to establish those processes beyond the life of the project. One of the advantages that we have in this, in terms of where we're coming from, is in that JISC have a number of special interest groups who have been historically very interested in this area. And CETAS itself was very involved in the IMS learning design process. A number of staff were, you know, key architects in that process. So our community has always been interested in learning design, perhaps maybe more from a technical point of view, but we do have a pedagogy forum who's actually one of the key drivers in the support project as well. So we do have a community that's not just technical, but is looking at the teaching community as well. So we're hoping that that will allow us a way to kind of extend findings of the programme beyond the life of the 2 years funding, beyond next year. And also during the project, we've had several meetings where we've SIG meetings where we've been able to showcase outputs of the programme, and at our last meeting James presented it as that as well. So we're doing various things to help establish the community, and also one of the things we'll be doing later this year, which I think will help in terms of us sharing designs and starting to tease out some issues there, we're going to have it, what we're calling a design bash, which are based on the code bashes that we have in CETAS, where it's more about technical interoperability, but where we'll actually get the projects together and they can start actually sharing their designs. One of the things to think about a community, especially an online community, and I'm sure we're all aware of this, is a very difficult thing to sustain. And although within the programme itself, I think there is a tremendous feeling of community and the projects are all working really well with each other. There's a lot of collaboration going on, which is great to see. Actually extending that out with the partners they're directly collaborating with, even just the rest of the programme, is sometimes an issue. And I think that just comes down to time. And I think that's something that we all have to grapple with. So we can put structures in place, but I think it does take an awful lot to actually make sure that everything is being pushed out into the community. Just quickly before I hand over to Di, some of the emerging issues that I think we want to bring out and discuss more, and I think Diana alluded to it a little bit, is one of the things to come out is the difference between an inspirational design and a runnable design. So what actually inspires you to want to look at a learning design? What are the views that you need? There are different ways that you can look at a learning design. There's the LAM sequence, which is quite immediate. You can see the course of activities. But is that what you as that practitioner really need? Are you more interested in maybe the actual teaching techniques used behind that design, the things that aren't so explicit in that representation? So I think it's becoming clear that we do need multiple views and multiple entry points into learning designs. In terms of searching, one of the things that's coming out, and I think this is probably something that we've all known anyway, is the increasing need for that. Teachers and practitioners, they like to know who's designed the design, and there's a great store, people put great store in that, as opposed to maybe subject specific, it's person specific. So technologies like Friend of a Friend, I think they could be utilised in terms of tagging learning designs and letting people share learning designs. So I think that's something that we need to be looking at and talking with other parts of the community about. I think we've all known that there has been a bit of a lack of learning design tools, but that is starting to be addressed, and I think some of the work in the programme is really exciting that in that area. I think particularly the work being done in Liverpool Hope with the Reload Editor, which was quite, it was a reference implementation of IMS learning design, but they're putting up much more user-friendly interfaces with that, so that's quite good to see. And again, in terms of sharing designs and having interoperability and IMS learning design is probably the only kind of interoperable way we have at the moment of sharing learning designs. But it was created quite a number of years ago, and I think we have to ask ourselves now, is it still relevant the way that IMS has described a learning design? I think if we were doing building that specification now, we'd probably take quite a different approach. And should we actually be thinking of a more kind of a service orientated approach and just our committed to service-orientated approaches through initiatives like the International Lean Framework with colleagues in Australia through DEST and colleagues in the Netherlands and also wider globally. So do we need to start thinking of these kind of looser couplings and thinking of web services approach? So these are kind of things that hopefully we'll get some discussion about. But I'm going to hand over to Di now, and he's going to show you some work that's happening within Europe.
Could you do the
yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll be
your assistant. Sit down. Oh. I'm Di Griffiths. I'm now a reader in e-learning at the CFIS. Before that, I was working in Spain for a long time, 15 years or something. So that's partly why I can have the European perspective here. But mainly because I'm working on 10 competence. I've lost a piece of the screen down there, the big European project called 10 competence, which is doing a lot of work in learning design with small L's and learning design with big L's, IMS learning design as well. Now, I should say the word competence is perhaps one of the most divisive that they could possibly have chosen for the name of a project, and means something quite different to the people who wrote it from what it means in the UK. So if anybody would like to talk about competencies and what they mean and why that word is up there, I'm very happy to talk about it all afternoon or whenever we have a break, but I won't go into it now, but suffice to say that this is not necessarily about what we would think of as competence-based learning in the UK. We're also running a number of workshops, open workshops, 3 or 4 a year. And we had one in Barcelona just recently, which was focused on learning design. Ernie came, we were delighted to be talking about the LAMS tools interoperability approach. And so through those, I also have seen a number of very interesting projects going on in Europe. Next one, please. Diana just talked about the need to represent activities carried out by the learner. And IMSLD, I just want to rewind a moment here, set out to be a way of just doing that. It was somebody sat down, thought, how can we do this? How can we make one that's sufficiently powerful to model all the different kinds of things that we'd like to do? And then they thought, oh, well, if we make one that's sufficiently powerful, then it ought to be able to map, to describe somebody else's model, and we ought to be able to map it onto each other. Oh, yeah, and then if we made that into XML, then we'd be able to pass them between machines and run them. And yeah, and then well, let's make a layer of applications on top of that so that we can deliver them to the learners. And you see how this is getting quite a long way from somebody sitting down and thinking how to represent the activities carried out by the learner. And it's very hard to see past the application back to the model, which was what we're really interested in. And the reason why I'm interested in working with IMSLD tooling is to kind of scratch away back some of these incrustations and see back to the model and see, well, does it work? You know, what Sheila was saying, you know, how is it what we need and how far can we run with it and what are the limitations? Because I think the tooling that we've got actually is affecting the way that we see this model in the first place. Next one. There's three particular things that we're looking at with IMS Learning Design. The focus has been on pre-designed formal learning. That's what it does. And that's okay. But what do we need to do to make that useful in a wider context? Because it's just part of the picture. And can IMSLD work without... how does it deal with this design time runtime split, which is actually another aspect of formality? And one of the things that characterizes formal learning is that you know in advance what it's going to be like. It's set out in advance. So these are two aspects of the design time runtime is another aspect of the same issue. The lack of flexible services in runtime, which I know is one of the big features of LAMS, which we appreciate is the way that it offers services, and the authoring is hard for non-experts. So those are the three. I'm just going to give you now, in the next 10 minutes, a little taster of the three activities, the three projects we're running, which address some of those. Next one. We've got this thing called the personal competence manager, which is really it's a kind of personal learning environment, really. It's a an application that enables you to manage your lifelong learning. The important thing to understand about this is that it's not just an application which plugs into some government specified set of competencies and you can map yourself how you're going on in your process towards achieving a preset qualification. It's a way in which communities and groups can dynamically describe the things which they need to learn in order to achieve a certain kind of a goal. Now that might be that they'd adopt the government specification, but it might equally be that we're involved in, I don't know, my partner is learning Gestalt therapy. There is no Gestalt therapy authority which says these are the competencies, these are the profiles you need, this is what you need to learn in order to be able to do that. That's something that community has to define. So the tools we're providing are the way in which those conversations can happen. Now, this is in a sense, this is strongly related to the PLE work which we've also been doing in CTIS. And the way I see this is that this is a kind of a wrapper around the formal learning. So it's saying, yeah, you can do formal learning. You know, here is a chunk of a unit of learning in IMSLD, which you can do. This is where it will take you, and this is what it's good for. There's a big conversation that has to happen around that, and that's what's one of the things which is supported by this application. If you don't want to do that formal, complex learning design, if all you're interested in is having a community of people saying, yeah, the example we always have is guitar playing, because we're all guitar players in the development group. You know, you want to learn to do those modal scales. Do you know any good resources for that? Yeah, there's this one. Oh, yeah, and there's that one, and we share them, and we know that we want to get towards a particular kind of profile. We share them. We can make little learning designs on the fly, which are being stored to a server. So they're adapting in real time. We're changing the profiles. We're changing the way that the routes between the profiles. And we can export those simple level A learning designs to IMS level A learning design. So then you have, let's have the next slide, make it a bit clearer. Okay, this is what the thing looks like. I've got it actually running on here, but I won't go into running it because it'll take 10 minutes. But you can see here that what you've got here is we're in the community of guitar players. We've got a profile which is playing guitar beginner. Now you can see all these things, the profile community, all these words can be changed. So you can see, this is kind of like a curriculum developer, if you like. It's a community of people deciding how you're going to get to achieve a certain objective in the big term. We've got resources in here. We've got little activities. These are activities here that I'm dragging around and making a little very simple learning design. The important thing is that learning design is in the context of a community of people. And in here, currently being implemented is the instant messaging and a forum, so that then you have a context which you're building over time in the context of a community. And that's being stored on a server, so you can make those changes as you're going. Then you can export that as a learning design if you want to. One of these resources might be a unit of learning, in which case you click on it and you go out to a dedicated, here's a complicated unit of learning, it's validated by so-and-so, we need 15 people in order to run it, and you need to pay a fee, and. So in terms of what's the context for learning design, is it too restricted? I would say my feeling at the moment is learning design is fine for making those very formal structures, but we need this kind of a structure around it which can provide the more flexible contextualization for it and allow people to do simple stuff without getting into complicated issues. That's how we're looking at it at the moment. Next one, please. Lack of flexible runtime services. The first bullet rather confusingly says to promote interoperability few services. That means that when the initial modelling idea behind learning design was being put through the standardisation process, all the vendors of VLEs, virtual learning environments, said to themselves, "Oh God, you know, we need to implement one of them and one of them and one of them and one of them, all these different services, in order to be compliant? No. We need to have a specification with very few services, so that it'll be run by lots of different systems." Well, yeah, that's great, except that nobody wants a system with no services in it. So we do need to have forums and chats and all these things available, wikis. So we've got a contradiction here. Local tools frameworks like LAMS are much richer. You've got easy provisioning, integration of the tools with the runtime, all these things are much easier. And we're working on solutions, and I like to think, James, that this is what we're developing is a learning activity management system inspired by LAMS, is how I'm thinking of it. So, you know, I think there has been this kind of dialogue going on here between some making the specification, which is quite restrictive to promote interoperability, and then LAMS showing us, you know, what you can do with effective interoperability of services. So we're kind of both working at this from opposite ends. Next one, please. Now, widgets. This is, I think, some exciting work we're doing here. Widgets are those things that you get if you're lucky enough to be using a Mac now, on the bottom, you know, the little application bar, or in Windows Vista, the little gadgets, they call them, don't they, in there. But not Windows 2000. Windows 2000 sidebar is aliases. It just launches an application. Widgets are on your desktop, a separate application layer. and they have their own engine. And you have them on the web too. They look kind of different, but you have them on the web too. They're running on the server, and they give you certain kinds of functionality you can bring into your web page. Next one. And that's what they look like on your Mac. And you see, one of the things that they often do is they pull in a lot of functionality that's going on behind here. This is some kind of, you know, snow little widget. You know, so it tells you what the snow is like in various different places. Well, it doesn't know anything about snow, but it links to a server which has very complicated back-end systems, which knows all about all the different places. That's a typical thing that you do with widgets. And they're very small, focused little bits of functionality. Next one. And here's a web-based one, and you can see here that you can pull different. I think is this NetVibes.
Yeah.
This is NetVibes. You can choose which kind of functionality you want on your home page, and set yourself up. More or less, you can set yourself up a little VLE here, and you know, spend couple of hours, knock up yourself a VLE, pulling in different bits of functionality. Next one. Now, the great thing about widgets is they're easy to develop. There's thousands of them out there. And Scott Wilson, who works with me in Bolton, in CFIS, has developed a specification based on the World Wide Web Consortium, which it's a tool packaging format and a little local API which works with a server that's sitting parallel with the learning design engine that's interpreting the learning design. So this thing has a little store of little tools, widgets, that it can show inside the browser which is running the learning design. So if we just look over the... Just to give you a very quick idea of what this might look like, this is a mock-up, okay? So this is SLED, and you would get a little window, like this, which is what we're working on the moment, it's a little forum. You would get a little forum window which is stuck inside your browser, but which is an independent little floating frame. And the tricky bit here is that widgets at present are typically single-user information pumps. And what we're doing is building the server which manages asynchronously of these interactions, whereby we can now put through forum messages into a little frame which will be running inside the learning design. Can you get back to the...
Yeah, I'm a
Mac user. No,
I love seeing that.
Yeah, here you go. Wrong one. There should be a demonstrator for that within this year, so we should have that up and running. And one of our hopes, obviously, is that you'll have lots and lots of different tiny little applications available. You know, they could be little tiny simulations or calculators or unit converters or whatever, which might be useful. Next one. Authoring is too difficult. Yeah, I think that's fair enough. We're developing a successor application to Reload. It's completely, largely a new code base, still Eclipse, but it's leveraging the graphics framework and the modeling framework in Eclipse. It will be integrated with QTI. Now that's interesting, because one of the things that happened in IMS when learning design went out there was that they ripped out all the assessment. We said, we've got QTI. You know, we can't have another bit of functionality which is assessment, we'll rip it out. So really we're trying to stuff it back in again by the back door by including QTI in the same editor and trying to make it transparent. There'll be a high level pre-authoring component using the Eclipse cheat sheets, widgets and help functions, which are very sophisticated to guide people into the routes they want. If they don't really want to get involved in the nitty gritty of editing, so I won't go into that now. But that's okay. That's the kind of thing. I've got this an early version of this running on the computer too. If anyone's interested, this is the kind of thing it's going to look like. So it's a kind of draggy droppy thing, you know, with little decision nodes. One of the things that's worth noting is at the top of my resources up here, you'll be able to drag your environment, you know, different environments over into my resources, so that environment is just a collection of resources, basically, and some services. You'll be able to keep those as reusable environments and other chunks which you may want to use. Next. So, it's worth saying this is still really what, I suppose what I've in my head, what we're doing here is we're saying, let's see how far we can go if we have produced really friendly tools, see where what the difficulties are with the concepts behind the specification. It's kind of not that interesting to know what the difficulties are with the implementations. It's much more interesting to know what the complexities are with the concepts underlying it. So we're trying to produce something which is easy, but which is still modelling with IMS Learning Design. See how far we can go with that. And I don't know. We're working closely with Liverpool Hope. They'll be trialling the tool with teachers, and we'll see how far we can go. Thank you. Yes, it's a good. Couple of very quick things. There's links at the end. The opendocumentpoint.net, which I was working with when I was in Spain, is a very lightweight repository which you can put on shared web space. And I think it's a very interesting work. The relevance to learning design is that it has a parser, so you can ask it through the API for any information you want about any zip file that you've stuck in there, any XML that's sitting inside a zip file. That means that you can interrogate it about what is inside the learning design. You know, what are the learning objectives in that learning design? Well, you don't want to download it, set up a run, have a look at it. You want to just say, show me the learning objectives, please. So that's something that's worth keeping an eye on. There, we've integrated that with the Reload Learning Design in a project called Design for Learning, which Liverpool Hope were the leaders of that. Next. And VLEs, I think one of the big issues is that, I'm nearly finishing now, one of the big issues with IMS Learning Design was that it was designed for a world where big VLEs would be the rulers, you know, like the top predators on the top, you know, the big dinosaurs mopping up everything. Well, it hasn't turned out like that, you know, so what does that mean? You know, it's a big question. But there will be big VLEs, for sure, and one of them, the LAMS export to IMS LD is really welcome. You know, speaking from people who are working in LD tooling, we were really pleased to see that. IMS LD is still on the Moodle roadmap, though I haven't heard any news from that sphere recently. But .learn has made tremendous progress in runtime. .learn is it's not got so many installations, but they tend to be very big ones in major universities. And they've made themselves a complete IMS LD player inside .learn. Not copper core, completely from scratch. Implements the whole specification, and it's very tightly integrated with the .learn system. So obviously all the tight integration of services that you might hope to find is in there. If you're interested in that, there's a link there. All the links are at the end of my slides. Okay, next. We're going to have some forums on 10 Competence website, which go live on Monday, I hope, where it would be good to discuss these issues if you like. So if you want to know about, you know, that's where we'll be doing the support for the Personal Competence Manager, the installation, all those things will be happening there. But we'd also really welcome more general comments about what we're doing, you know, whether it makes sense, where would be better directions to go, how it compares with other approaches, etc., etc. And that's it. So we have 30 seconds for discussion, I think.
I think we might skip discussion for now. I'm sorry,
it's
during the break.
Sheila zoomed through hers in 5 minutes and I've used up 25. But she knows me, that's...
Will you join me though in thanking Dan, Sheila?
And I'm also available any time you can catch.